Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 138 with Jennifer Casatat. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Jennifer Casatat, we explore a number of interesting topics like what inspired her to start playing ukulele, digital leadership, the fear approach just doesn't work, and the power of optimism. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the top 10 fundraising ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am here today with Jennifer Casatat, who is a wife, mom, and a teacher librarian at Cardinal Carter CHS in Aurora, a former literacy consultant for the York Catholic School District Board, and the author of the book Social Leadia. She's also a grad student and a food-loving, book-loving, ukulele player wannabe. She loves to hang out with her family, playing cards or hiking, and enjoys curling, golfing, reading, and writing. She is passionate about showing teachers and students how they can use technology and social media to make the world a better place. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to get to what inspired you to pursue a career in education, but you brought up ukulele. I have to ask about that. And, that makes me think of like Eddie Vedder and some of his solo albums he's put out. And are there specific ukulele playing musicians that inspire you? Have you heard Eddie's albums? And how'd you get a ukulele?
So no, but I'm totally going to go look up some of Eddie Vedder's stuff. I actually suffered a concussion last year, and it was a really hard road to recovery. It took almost 10 months for me to feel myself again. And one of the things that I tried to do was some things that were not connected to screens. And so I purchased a ukulele in the hopes that suddenly I would learn how to play that instrument and it would sort of take me away from a screen. But unfortunately, because I didn't take lessons and I relied on YouTube to teach me, I haven't gone so far, but I'm a wannabe. So I want to pick it up again. It's beautiful. Like it's this gorgeous green color and I was so excited to have it. And now I just have to follow through and maybe look up some Eddie Vedder songs and do better.
Yeah. I'll try to find an album or something while we're talking and link it up in the show notes. But they say it takes 10,000 hours, right? So I'm sure you're on your way to being ukulele, just the best player ever born on this earth.
Oh, yes, that's it. I'm hoping.
I'm going to have to ask about playing cards, too, because I love games. So are those just normal playing cards? Or are you talking about like some type of not weird, but fun and creative, like elf game or something like that? What type of card games are we talking?
No. So it's just regular card games. So I have a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old. And when we sit at the dinner table, we have awesome conversations. But my husband's family, huge card players. And we just sort of started on this routine. Like first we were playing gin rummy. So we'd finish, we'd clear off the dinner table, of dishes, and we'd have a game of cards. And we'd all sit around without a device and just really enjoy each other's company. And we have moved on. We played a game. My parents are Italian and they have a game called, I guess, Stairs to 40. It's kind of like gin rummy. And our latest is Canasta. So we play cards almost after every meal or when we're all home together. And it's an awesome, awesome routine. Certainly it helps the kids with mental math, but I just enjoy the camaraderie and the friendship that you don't often get when you're with teens. So it's been pretty, it's a very cool family tradition that we have.
Love it. Thank you. I needed to get through those two questions before I could be fully present in the interview. So now I can ask Jennifer, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, it was actually a teacher. I bet you a lot of people say that on the show. I had a teacher who was so passionate about literature. He just exuded this motivation and passion. He was a mentor to me. And I said, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to inspire kids to read and love reading. And so I became an English teacher. That's how I began. And it's funny because I then started to work for him. He was my department head. And one of my first jobs was to work with him. And I couldn't even say his first name. So I would say Captain, oh, Captain, my Captain from Dead Poets Society, just because. Yeah. And it was very bittersweet when I helped to organize his retirement. I created an iMovie of sort of all the memories. And so he definitely inspired me to be where I am.
And how would you describe your leadership style? How did you develop it?
I don't know. So like I was in an official, I guess, leadership role for 6 years when I was working as a literacy consultant. I was the literacy consultant and a program resource teacher, and I led lots and lots of professional learning opportunities for teachers. So that was sort of my official leadership. But when I reflect back, I think I've always been an informal leader. So I'm the person in the department who says, oh, I'll be the coordinator for this course. What would you like to do? And even social events, I'll be the events coordinator. I think it's just in my personality. I know when I was doing a principal leadership course, I'm doing my MEd, we did talk about transformational leadership, and I love the sound of that. I don't know that I necessarily am, but the idea that I motivate others to do more than they originally thought possible, I'm like very optimistic and, you know, I have my eye on what could be done, what is possible. Even my blog is called Endless Possibilities. But I also think I have a servant leadership attitude too, which I think is important when you work in a school. You know, I always say to my partner, now that I'm a teacher librarian, we're here to serve teachers and students. And so as much as I want to challenge them to be the best that they could be, I also think we're here to help in any way that we can. So maybe I'm a combination of those two styles, if those two styles even officially exist. I don't know.
And what would you consider your worst leadership mistake? What did you learn from it?
Oh, so because I'm that whole pie in the sky kind of personality, several times I scared people. And I know I did. Like I remember like almost too many examples where, you know, I wasn't listening enough to understand, listen. By listening, I mean not listening to what they're verbally saying, but their body language. And I pushed too hard. So when you're working with a teacher and you say, okay, let's connect to, you know, another school and another community, and they're not ready for it, it doesn't end well. So, you know, I have teachers who are avoiding me because they thought, you know, they're just not ready to be there. And that's, I think that was my worst mistake. I think I'm a lot better now. Certainly one of my mentors, George Kuros, talks about helping people get from their point A to their point B. And that was a hard lesson for me because I would always have my point A in mind. And I had to really scale back and realize, okay, not everyone is there. Not everyone needs to be there. And I have to be very cognizant of where to challenge and where to support, but certainly so that they could get to where they need to go, not necessarily where I need to go.
Like that idea of their point A to their point B, because it's so focused on who you're serving, going back to your leadership style, right? And and really empathizing and understanding like the context, I guess, in which they exist and what they need, your people. So really, really appreciate that. Were there any other moments or skills or tactics that you learned that helped you become a better listener?
Just practice. I mean, one of my mentors, Lori Lisi, when I was working at the board, she was so good at sitting back and listening to what everyone had to say. And then she had this uncanny ability of sort of pulling out what they said and paraphrasing. And like that is a hugely important, I think, leadership skill, because people want to be heard. And at the same time, they want to be acknowledged. And then she was able to then, after she had sort of thought about it and paraphrased, she was able to move forward with sort of pulling pieces together, especially if we were in a meeting, for example. She had this uncanny ability to do that. And so I just practiced doing that. I practiced sitting back, trying to listen, taking notes if I needed to, so that I could, you know, kind of paraphrase and redirect as necessary. And that just honestly, just trying to do it over and over again, I think I'm way better at it than I used to be. But it does, it takes conscious effort and explicit sort of focus that this is what you're going to do. Or at least it does for me. It does not come naturally, because I'm already in my head when someone's saying something, I'm formulating my opinion or what I want to say. That's just my personality. I just jump in, right? And so it's been very, very humbling, but also very, very good for me to watch her do that and try to emulate that.
Yeah, that's an awesome skill, that paraphrasing. I think some people call it reflecting. Other people might call it mirroring. And I learned that skill, I think probably first in crucial conversations where you're trying to make it safe and you're trying to mirror, you know, your partner that you're talking to show that, to demonstrate that you understand. But more recently, it's come up in a book that I love. It's called Never Split the Difference. And within that book, it's all about negotiation. But how you use people's words and mirror them to help them feel understood in a hostage negotiation, right? That's obviously going to be great because people's lives are going to be saved. Stakes are a little less high, but still pretty high within schools. And there it's, you know, it's more about influence, but rooted in understanding your people, you know? And one other book I want to recommend to listeners and to you as well, Leadership Step by Step with Joshua Spodek. I want to say that was episode 79. This is number 138, so it's quite a while ago. But he's an NYU leadership professor, and in his book that we read in the Mastermind, at the end he teaches three exercises that are all about listening, really, really listening, listening at a level that I've never thought possible, right? And the exercises are called Meaningful Connection, Helping People Feel Understood, and then Leading with Empathy. And it starts with that reflection piece, you know, in mirroring and paraphrasing that you're talking about, but it goes a few steps deeper too. And if you want to really lead people, it begins with understanding where they are and what their passion is. So those are some tips for the listeners of the show.
I love that. I just wrote down both of those titles and we'll look them up. It's funny you say mirroring, because I attended a parent conference. Of course, I can't remember the woman's name for the life of me. I'm sorry. But she talked about mirroring in terms of helping children with their behaviors. And I went home and tried it with my teens. Man, does it work. So it works around the boardroom table, but it also works as a parent. There's a such great power to mirroring. So thank you for making the leap from what I said to that concept, because it really is so, so valuable.
That's great. Yeah. And for the listeners, you know, linked up in the show notes for you. And it's funny that you mentioned your kids, because I was thinking, you know, you're always thinking of creative titles, right? To get people to download podcasts, read blog posts, and watch Facebook Live videos. And that was something I was throwing around, the idea of being able to influence your staff to complete their unit plans, but also to get your kids to pick up their room, right? It's skills that can transfer between the school and the home. But speaking of books, listen, let's talk about your book, Socialedia, and tell us a story of, you know, why did you write it? How did you get started and everything about the book?
All right. Well, it actually came from my kids. You know, it seems like everything in my world revolves around them, but it became an idea because a few years ago, my daughter, who is now 17, she was 15 at the time, was asked in an interview, what social media are you on? And what will I learn about you if I go there? And I was blown away. And I think what was really startling to me was that I had spent so much time and energy leading teachers to get on social media, To leverage social media for global connections and for ideas and to celebrate and share. And yet I realized that when it came to my own daughters, I was so concerned with their safety to the point where, you know, you hear all these terrible things that happen online. It was completely different from what I was experiencing as an educator, like a global and connected educator. And yet that never translated to my kids. So when my daughter asked for a YouTube channel, I'm like, oh yeah, but I don't want your name or your face with it. Mm-hmm. And when she wanted to, you know, create a vlog, same thing. I said, absolutely, honey, I support you, but you can't have your face or your name on it. And then she's being asked this question and I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I really sort of thought about that. That was a life-altering moment for me. And that coincided with meeting my friend George Kuros, who's now a mentor and good friend of mine. And he talked about digital leadership in a parent session that I attended. And so I was wearing my parent hat, not my educator hat. And he defines digital leadership as using the vast reach of technology and social media to improve the lives, well-being, and circumstances of others. And I was like, wow, okay, that's really counter everything, like countercultural in many, many ways, right? We don't look mm-hmm. at social media in that way. Mm-hmm. And certainly, if I had taken that approach with my kids, it would have been a different ballgame altogether. So I started to sort of meet other kids who were leveraging social media in this way. They were learning and sharing their learning. They were promoting causes that were important to them, both online and in real life. And they were a more positive influence on others. So then he introduced me to a publisher and the idea for this book would not go away. And so, you know, I was blessed to have Dave and Shelley Burgess. They're amazing. Dave Burgess Consulting. Thought it was a good idea. And what I think I'm most proud of in the book is the fact that there are student vignettes. So there are student, I don't speak through the students. The students begin and end every chapter in their own voices. And they tell us what they're doing. And let's go back to listening for a second. We really need to listen. We're in 2017. That fear approach, it doesn't work. And it's not valuable in a society where kids are being Googled more and more when they're applying to post-secondary or when they're applying to a job. So how are we helping them in school? All of the kids I met had a caring adult mentor. And for me, it's about, well, that's not fair. Like if we're talking equity, you know, not everyone has a tech-savvy mom or dad or, you know, guardian who's going to help them navigate those waters. Some of them take the initiative on their own, but can we as educators be those caring adults? So the book is really stories, my own stories in my position as a leader at the district level, as well as a teacher librarian and a teacher, as well as the voices of those students and other teachers who are doing amazing things to help students leverage social media. Mm.
I heard at the end there, you know, this idea of mentorship with kids and digital leadership as well. Maybe what's two other things schools could do to help kids in the digital realm?
Well, I think it goes back to not being afraid, having teachers who embrace, like, you know, we worry about age restrictions. We have every right to be worried about age restrictions, but creating class accounts where we can help kids navigate spaces safely, but to connect, like it's so easy to connect to an expert, to another class, to an author. You know, we're really not using technology in our schools in transformational ways sometimes. We're really just using it to replace some of the old pedagogy. So I would say that would be super, super important to be able to look at using technology and social media in our school in the context of making our curriculum come alive for kids.
I like that idea of making curriculum come alive for kids. And I think about two mastermind members, Colin and Clayton, and they're connecting their communities of learners so they can learn about each other's cultures. And we're talking about Colin in New Jersey in the U.S. and then Clayton's just outside of Sydney in Australia. And they're doing a mm-hmm. lot of neat, you know, collaborative projects. And that's because of the opportunity, right, that technology affords us. So I appreciate you sharing that type of idea too.
Well, absolutely. And when you think about, like, we often talk about this generation not having empathy, or, you know, or kids jumping on and, you know, not understanding someone else's perspective and doing and shaming and that sort of thing. Well, that just doesn't come naturally to kids. We need to be able to show them what perspective taking looks like in person and online, because this social media online is so much a part of our experiences today. Mm-hmm. One of the most powerful experiences that I had is when we connected. I worked with a school in our district to connect with a First Nations school mm-hmm. in Ontario, Manitoulin Island. And I tell you that, like, you could hear a pin drop, first of all, in the classroom.
Wow.
And the kids in their video reflections afterwards spoke to you can never learn this in a textbook. Like, I can read about racism. It was around an inquiry question, you know, is Canada really tolerant? And so for them, it was. And then to hear the perspective of these other students who basically live in a very different Canada as a result of their experiences, it radically transformed their ideas and the stereotypes that they had heard over and over and over again. And so, I mean, you can't beat the opportunities that we now have to connect our students, to hear perspective, to teach empathy, and to show others kindness, and, you know, to develop a relationship with people that they wouldn't otherwise be able to form a relationship with.
Yeah, it bothers me when people talk about modern day kids and lacking empathy and that kind of thing. You know, I think that's another fear thing again, and seeing how much time they spend in front of screens, and you hear the, you know, they're looking at their phone, they're not talking to each other, they're right next to each other, they can't have a face-to-face conversation. But, you know, I've found these students to be incredibly empathetic. You know, I've shared this story on the podcast before, but the brief version of it is I invited all kids that were the appropriate age to run the Chicago Marathon with me. And over 3 years, over 100 kids from the far south side of Chicago, I'd say about 88% or more receiving a free and reduced lunch in the U.S., put in miles after miles of practice with me and helped raise $25,000 for kids in Africa to provide clean drinking water, access to it.
Mm.
And they completed the marathon too, like 80-something percent of the kids. You know, not all of them. It's hard. But they gave it their best shot. You don't take on a marathon and raise money for kids that you've never even met if you lack empathy, you know? And so it just hasn't been my experience. And it's cool to give them, like the story that you shared, when you give them the opportunity, right? These powerful moments to step up to the plate, I find that they always do, right? And it goes back to educators and expectations. And what do you think about that little person in front of you? And what do you expect them? How do you expect them to behave, et cetera, et cetera? But I think they step up, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think it comes back to what you just said in terms of opportunity. But I also think, I think it was my friend Tracy Brady who made the point that, you know, when we connect with these other places. So for example, last year I ran an initiative here at the school through our book club, and we partnered with an orphanage in Uganda, not an orphanage, a school in Uganda rather. And we recorded our favorite stories and the kids fundraised. It was so mm-hmm. awesome. We had this bake sale. It was crazy awesome. And they raised money for a lightning rod for the school, as well as they recorded their favorite stories, and we bought a solar powered MP3 player and solar powered speakers because they don't have electricity, let alone Wi-Fi. Talk about digital access. But one of the things that we definitely, because my friend Tracy Brady reminded me of this, is we can't just say, oh, we're helping this school in Uganda, because what we also want to do is have them share with us some of their their hopes, their dreams. Certainly, we didn't do that with the First Nations school. We didn't have enough time to do that. But with this school in Uganda, we've asked them for their favorite stories so that there's a reciprocal relationship, yeah. right? Kids are understanding that in so much as I'm learning about your culture, my culture isn't necessarily higher than yours or better than yours. It's just very different. And what does that look like? And what are the opportunities to learn more about what you're doing, right?
So important. You know, I went to South Africa for 3 summers and led professional development for teachers and administrators. And what we were taught prior to going is that it's not better. It's not right or wrong. Whatever you see there is just different. Like, that's what you have to think. And now that I live in Belgium, it's a lot different than living in the US, right? And there's things that I'm really enjoying and things that I find so frustrating. Mm-hmm. But it's not better or worse. It's just different. And I got to adjust, right? So again, another great story that I appreciate that you shared right there. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. I'm curious. I love this quote. What is ordinary to you is extraordinary to me. That's from a guy named Derek Sivers. And so with that being said, what is your superpower, Jennifer?
Oh my gosh, what is my superpower? You know what? I had a girl come into school today and she was trying to get on the computer and she was trying to upload an assignment and she was kind of down in the dumps about it and she was being really negative. And then by the end of it all, she said to me, "Miss, you are the most optimistic person that I have ever met in my life."
Yeah.
And you... She said, "You just made my day." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, Rose, you just made my day." But I think that maybe that's my superpower. You know, to a fault, you know, I'm always looking on the bright side. And some people sometimes are like, "You know what? Just let me wallow for a minute before you move me to the bright side." But that's it. Like, I have such hope. Like, we talked about kids these days. I look at kids these days, and maybe it's a result of my experience. I have such hope for where this generation is going to be, because I have met so many incredible, inspiring kids. You know, we can look at education today, how broken it is, but I look at it and I go, you know, we're doing so many more wonderful things than even when I was in school. So I would say that's my superpower, optimism. And I try to be really nice. Like, I hate the word nice, but I really, really try to be thoughtful and kind because, you know, I had a really tough past where people were not very kind and thoughtful to me, towards me. So I go out of my way to make sure that I'm thoughtful and kind too.
I'm fascinated by the amount, you know, that you're right. So you got endless possibilities, the blog, and then, you know, your book, social media. And, you know, one of my foundational beliefs, I guess, is that everybody should attempt, or it would benefit the world if everybody attempted to put themselves out there through consistently doing a blog or maybe a vlog or a podcast or writing books or whatever. But it's scary. And it's important, though, because everybody's so unique, right? You just talked about some hard experiences in generally, right, that have impacted you, which have made you want to be extremely kind to people. You know, and then I'm sure that comes through your writing and through how you interact with people. And so everybody has only their experiences. And so that's such a unique gift to the world, right? So for the listeners that they have a book in them, they have a blog, they have a vlog, they have a podcast, but they haven't started yet. What would you say to those guys?
Just do it. It's amazing to me. So I was definitely inspired to start blogging. I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago. And again, it's George, who I attended one of his sessions and he talked about blogging. And I, you know, I'm an English teacher. So I've always wanted to write a book. I never thought it would be an educational book. I never made time to write. But George helped me to realize that, you know, that reflecting, even if nobody reads it, is so important. And it doesn't have to be perfect, because when I first started to blog, I was crippled, almost debilitated by the number of revisions, right? Because I would read it and it was like, oh, it's not perfect. And then, so I wasn't a prolific blogger at all, because it took me so long. I had all these blogs in draft. And so I would say, don't worry about it being perfect. I can't remember who said it, but done is better than perfect. It might've been Dave Burgess who said it, or it may have been someone else, but done is better than perfect. And so for me, blogging has become this incredible place. I have blog posts running around in my mind all the time. I don't always get them on paper, and I don't always get them to publish, but it's kind of the way I reflect on the world, reflect on my practice. I'm a highly reflective person to a fault. So if something goes really right, I want to write about it. And if something goes really wrong, I need to write about it. And if I'm excited about an idea, right? So you just never know what will resonate. And for many years, no one read my blog. So, you know, if we're worried about, oh, as soon as I press publish, you know, people are going to read it and criticize me because I'm putting myself out there. Well, it could be 3 years before anybody even reads your blog. So do it for yourself and do a reflection tool, because I think we don't, as a society, certainly as teachers, we don't make enough time in our day to reflect. And whether, I love what you said about podcasting, whether it's in writing or it's orally in the form of a vlog or a podcast, I think we're all better off if we sort of take an opportunity once in a while to reflect upon what's going well and what's not going well, and where, you know, where we want to go if it needs to be a different direction. That's why I do it anyway.
Yeah, I think it's so valuable, because doing the podcast or blogging, or even if you never hit publish, but you just go through the exercise, you know, it helps clarify your voice and who you are, what you stand for, what those beliefs are, which are really, you know, really important. And like you said, I love this line, like, you did it for yourself first before you had readership, you know. And for me, I've been doing this for 2 years. Luckily, somehow, the first month I got over 1,000 downloads. Okay, that was cool.
Wow. But
it took you know, it took 3 months to get to 2,000. By April of that year, okay, it was almost at 4,000, 5,000 in June 2016. And then it kind of stayed in this 5,000 and 6,000 range for quite a while, until about a year later when it was almost at 8,000. And I'm like, wow. The ever elusive 10,000 is kind of there, you know? And then from 8, it jumped up to 9 in June 2017, July 2017, 17,000. And that's so amazing. So now it seems to like have hit this critical mass, you know, moment, and the downloads are coming, but it doesn't happen overnight, right? And so in the beginning of the podcast, I just did it for myself. I wanted to become a better leader and have awesome conversations with people like you, Jennifer. And now I get to put this out for people. People respond to it. And, you know, you can almost count on the downloads. And that's great. Like, wow, like, you're adding value to the world and people are responding to it. So, listener, if you want to start, you know, don't worry about if anybody reads it at the beginning or listens, if it's a podcast. Just put yourself out there. You're going to get better. My first episodes are terrible, right? I'm so glad that you're getting me now. 137 episodes in, because this is number 138, because when I interviewed, you know, the first 10 they're terrible. I got great guests, but me, I'm bad. But that improves with time and with practice, right? Just like ukulele. It's all about ukulele.
There you go. And it sounds like you're pretty reflective too, friends. So absolutely. You know, it was really interesting when it actually came to, okay, so I have this great idea for a book. I know exactly where I want it to go. I was able to go through, and it might have been either George or Dave Burgess himself who wrote, it was Dave, who said, go through your blogs, because you would be amazed at the stories and the perspective changing that you have undergone as a result of blogging. And do you know, that was one of the things that I was doing when I was preparing for the novel, for the book rather, was to go through my past blog posts, and there was so much value there. I was able to sort of pull, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about this story, and pull that story and make it part of the book. So especially if you're a budding writer, you know, it may not happen for a couple of years. I mean, I've been blogging for almost 5 years now, but eventually when you do write that novel or write that book, I think blogging just helps to solidify those experiences for you as well.
I'm working on my first book right now, which has been a lot of fun. And I'm already starting to think about the next two. One is going to be just the stories of the amazing leaders I get to serve in the mastermind, because it's something that I believe in so much. I see how much support and help is there by solving problems within a community in a safe setting, right? Instead of leading in isolation. So I want to tell those stories. I think if every member had a chapter, so to speak, like that would be incredibly powerful. And then the other one would be to like go through the first 100 or whatever episodes of the show. And what are those big themes, right? And what are those stories? And retell them, and then ask great guests like you, hey, would you contribute now just a little bit more to the book, some fresh content? Like how valuable that would be to school leaders. I think that would be a lot of fun as well. But I'm like, oh man, I need to finish the first one, you know?
And then we'll get to the others. Thinking ahead. Well, mm-hmm. You're optimistic. You know you're going to get there. So yeah. There you go.
Jennifer, if you could add a class to school that's not currently taught that you know of, what would that class be?
Well, digital leadership, of course. It's funny. One of the things I talk about at the beginning of the book, because people are like, really, why digital leadership and not just leadership? Or why, mm-hmm. you know, do mm-hmm. we still talk about digital citizenship when we should just be talking about citizenship? I don't think we're there yet. I really don't. I think for so long, you know, social media and the online world has not had a sufficient place in school for us to be able to help kids to use it for learning and to empower others and to be a more positive influence on others. They've sort of been in this realm on their own. So I would love to see a digital leadership course using the framework, right, of that, but mm-hmm. also that's where we teach kids, what does digital citizenship look like? You know, what's the permanence of your behavior? What does copyright actually mean? Creative Commons mean? So all those digital citizenship elements, which right now they're nowhere, right? Like they're taught in a discrete unit somewhere, maybe by a teacher librarian, because it's not part of our curriculum per se. I mean, it's part of the ISTE standards, I know, in the States, and we talk about it a lot here in Ontario, but it doesn't sit in a course. So I think that would be digital literacy. So, you know, basic skills, you know, some kids have them, some kids don't, you know, have a passion project in there. I think a digital leadership course would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. You know, and are you familiar with Medium, the platform Medium?
I am, yes.
Are students utilizing that at all?
You know what? I don't think they are. I know I'm not even utilizing it as much as I should, but what, now that you reminded me of it, what a great opportunity that would be for sort of a collective reflection or commenting on each other's work.
I don't have the time or capacity to do this, but I'm going to throw out an idea that I think a listener or you or somebody that does have the ability to do it much better than me. But there's publications on Medium as well, right? Mm-hmm. There's this idea of almost like an online magazine with an editor. And a lot of people, they work for free, but they put it together just to add value. And people that are following those publications have much bigger reach, right? So if I get a piece published with that group, a lot more people are going to read it than if I just hit, you know, publish by myself. And wouldn't it be cool if somebody organized some type of student voice publication and then solicited contributions from around the world? That would be freaking awesome. I don't have the time to do it. Maybe you do. Maybe a listener does. Somebody needs to do it that's listening right now.
Sounds good. Maybe the summer for me. I don't know.
When you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
You know what? Mother Teresa. And my Catholicity is going to exude here. I teach in a Catholic school. I grew up in a Catholic system, but I would say Mother Teresa. I would also say Pope Francis, mm-hmm. only because they're wise in terms of what they say, but they model. Like they're all about action, and they're all about trying to make the world a better place. And so those are two leaders that really just stand out to me.
Great choices. Not going to argue with you there. They're awesome. Just for fun, what do you do for fun, Jennifer? I'm curious.
So, I don't have a whole lot of time for fun, but I am I'm in a curling league. My husband and I started curling a couple of years ago. I don't know how many people in the States curl. But it's a big thing in Canada.
See you on the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's fun. It's cold, but it's far more strategic than you would think. And we do it on Friday nights with a great, great group of people. And so I love that. And I missed it last year because, as I said, I was out with a concussion and I obviously could not be on ice and for fear of falling, but also because I couldn't stand for quite a few months. But so definitely looking forward to the season. It starts again at Thanksgiving. I like to golf. I'm horrible at it, but I've got the right outfit and the right attitude.
That's right.
I just love to be walking on these beautiful golf courses with my husband or with a group of friends. And I always play like a scramble or a best ball because I'm not very competitive because I'm not very good. So, but I do enjoy doing that as well. We ski as a family in the winter. So we like to do that. And I'm in two book clubs. One I started 23 years ago. Oh my gosh. So I started this book club when I was in my first year teaching. And it was a collective of a very eclectic mix of people, including my mother-in-law. So lots of people that are significantly older than me. And now we have some significantly younger people as well. And what was so fascinating about that, so I love to read. I don't have as much time as I would like, but I love to read. And then to hear what other people think about the same thing you're reading, there's such power in that. So it's so cool to see book clubs come up about my book. I can't tell you, like, the first time I heard about a book club about my book, I was giddy because I'm like, that is so cool. But, so we would read a book about the war, for example, and we had a woman named Jean, and she would share her perspective of when she was a little girl, you know, in Germany, in the war. Like, it was so cool. And it's really evolved over the past 23 years. We've really become a family. It's called Tell Me How It Ends, though. And that was my choice because I never got to finish most of the books, but we've read a stupid, incredible number of books together. And my other book club is more about getting together and drinking wine, truthfully, but it's all good. We all pick a good book as well. So those are, and then playing cards. I'm also in a card group with friends, if you can imagine. A little obsessed there. Yes, when I have time, those are the activities I try to throw in there.
And besides ukulele, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
You know what? Coding. I just put out a blog post, learning is hard. Learning is hard. New learning sometimes is hard for me. And I started a coding club last year. And then, of course, I was away. So I it came back up this year. I've got these really awesome students in grade 12 who are basically leading it. And so I'm more than anything sitting as a body, like a supervisor, but they're teaching it. And I took an awesome course with Alice Keeler in the summer. And I just wish I could be better at that. I just feel like I know at some point it's going to click for me. But so far it hasn't. And that's frustrating because normally I'm really good at things that I try and do. So I wish that would come a little bit more automatically to me, but I'm hopeful that I'm going to get there. And I know these two students, I mean, they're so awesome. Tonight we coded three or four lines of code and it was awesome. So.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. If you could put a message on a marquee across the globe in front of all the schools, what would it read for just one day?
It would be, if you have the choice between being right and being kind, choose kind. That was from the book Wonder that I just finished. I just feel like we would be in such a better place if people were just nicer to one another, more empathetic toward one another. I just don't know where the meanness sometimes comes from, and I wish it would go away. So that's what I would put on.
Well, Jennifer, you made it. I'm so proud of you. This is the last question of the podcast, but it's a big one. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
All right. Well, this is kind of cheating for me because I have a friend. Her name is Shauna Pollock, and she's the author of Classroom Magic. And I met her in real life years ago, who actually did create her own school from the ground up. And I've been watching this process. And so I love everything that she's done. She's called it Blue Sky School. It's in Ottawa. And what she did was she assembled some awesome educators with a learner mindset. For me, that would be right, very, very important. So not necessarily people who are experts in lots of different things, but who are striving to be learners all the time, because I think that's what our teachers need to be at the school. We need to be learners first. I would then take all of the different innovations that I know that our PLN, that people in my PLN are using with much success. And I think that so they may not be, you know, research based necessarily as much as they're things that are working for people in my PLN. So flexible seating and design thinking and genius hour or passion projects, interdisciplinary focus. So those kinds of innovative practices. So learner mindset, who's willing to implement an innovator mindset, I guess, an innovative practice. And then I would have a student body. I would have students who feel like they are a part of what this school is going to look like, because student voice is so, so important to me. I feel like we don't listen to them enough. Yes, we're educators and facilitators and guiders and mentors, but we do really need to listen more to what students have to say. And then when you put all of that together, I think we would just decide on what are some of the things what do we want this place to look like? And we would get at it together. And I think it would be super awesome. Does that make any sense? I hope so.
Absolutely. And I love the passion behind it, and the fact that you had a friend that actually executed on this question, which I love to ask all the guests and see how they'll respond. So yeah, it was great.
Oh, you should. You should. She's awesome.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So I think I've given you a lot of my standing on a soapbox. I'm not going to give you words of advice, but certainly please reach out. I'm on Twitter at jcassatodd. I am, I blog at jcassatodd.com. And, you know, I'm experimenting with other spaces. I'm in a Facebook group for teacher librarians as well. Do check out my book on Amazon. And there is a special website that is dedicated to the resource resources in that book. It's socialledia.org. The problem with writing a book about social media is it feels like you publish the book and it might already be outdated. So that website really is a place where I would love to have a conversation with you. We have flip grids for each of the chapters. I put out a provocation. Would love to hear what some of you have to say about some of the ideas in the book or just some ideas about using social media in education in general.
Better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Jennifer. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Jennifer in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Jennifer, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much for having me.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.